This is Jay Sekulow. Warning, Biden's hot mic moment leads to a red line with Israel.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Sekulow. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jay Sekulow.
Everybody, during the State of the Union, there was a lot of discussion about Israel, at least tacit support coming from the Biden administration. But you really heard what he really had to think and what he really had to say when it went to what is called a hot mic moment. And this was after the State of the Union, while he was talking to members of Congress. He made a statement that has gotten a lot of attention out of our team and get a lot of the media as well. And it certainly has gotten the attention of the State of Israel. Take a listen to this.
I was telling your secretary that I was in Jordan and Israel this weekend. And just, you know, you got to keep pushing what you're doing on the humanitarian stuff and all this stuff. So
I told him, baby, tell me this. It's a baby in my life.
Sir, just...
So what he said there was, he's talking to members of the Senate, and he said, you know, I've told Bibi he's got to not do this again, not repeat this, and talking about some of the actions that they're taking militarily, and then said, I said, we're going to have a come to Jesus meeting, to which Bibi Netanyahu responded yesterday on Fox and Friends. It was an interesting response, I think, half tongue in cheek, but here we go.
So what does that mean to you, a come to Jesus meeting?
I don't know. I'm not familiar with the term, even though Jesus wasn't born that far away from here. I can tell you that if it means having a heart-to-heart conversation, we've had that plenty of times over the 40 years that I've known Joe Biden.
So I thought it was a good response. You know, Jesus was born about 4.5 miles, 5 miles from where Benjamin Netanyahu was making that statement for his interview. But here's the issue that is pressing, and that is obviously Joe Biden, Andy, is starting to really placate the left flank of his party on the Israel issue. And that's not a good sign for Israel. It's not a good sign for stability in the Middle East.
And no, it isn't, because by placating the Palestinians, the Arab vote, the vote that he thinks that he's got to have to win this election, he is step by step distancing himself from Israel, because it's inevitable. Israel is fighting an existential war here. A terrible thing happened to Israel in October of last year, and the Israelis are doing all they can to combat that and fighting it. And now the President of the United States is saying, if you enter into Rafah, because that's the way I understood it, you've established a red line, which means a line after which something terrible is going to happen. That can never be the case, Jay.
You know, what's interesting is in defining the red line, he did not say that the Iron Dome, which is Israel's missile defense system, which is given to the Israelis by the United States, technology that's been developed, but also the actual rockets that go up to hit these weapons. He's not saying that will be removed. He's not saying we're going to stop that. So I'm not exactly sure what the red line means. But what we are sure about, and what's your comments on this, 1-800-684-3110, is that he is definitely starting to placate what I would call the left side of his base. As you know, we are in our Life and Liberty Drive here at the ACLJ, and abandoning Israel in their greatest time of need, which is what I'm afraid is happening here, is completely unacceptable. Israel's our ally. It's in a fight for its very survival. We know that. We've mobilized our offices here in the United States. I was on a call with our offices in Strasbourg and in Israel this morning, a Zoom call. We can't continue this critical fight without your help, and we're using every avenue, every international venue, every court that we can to defend Israel. Even as President Biden orders military to create this floating, what I call floating disaster off of Gaza, and he draws this red line, which we're not sure what it means. We have filed a FOIA, a Freedom Information Act request, over UNRWA funding. We're looking at a lawsuit that will likely be filed in just a few days. We just filed a legal submission to the UN Human Rights Council. That has been filed, and are preparing to make a critical oral intervention in Geneva this month that C.C. Heil is going to be doing. So, and at home, we'll be fighting against the Biden administration's promise to make Roe versus Wade permanent. So you got domestic issues as well. Please support us now during our Life and Liberty Drive. Any amount is doubled at ACLJ.org. And by becoming an ACLJ champion, you fight alongside us each and every month. So join the fight today. Go to ACLJ.org to have your gifts doubled now. And if you can do that on a monthly basis at ACLJ.org, you become an ACLJ champion. Back with more in a moment. red line that if Israel goes into Rafah, which is the next planned attack point, that there'll be a consequence. I want you to listen to what he was asked about that in this interview. Take a listen, number 16.
What is your red line with Prime Minister Netanyahu? Do you have a red line? For instance, would invasion of Rafah, which you have urged him not to do, would that be a red line?
It is a red line, but I'm never going to leave Israel. The defense of Israel is still critical. So there's no red line. I'm going to cut off all weapons so they don't have the Iron Dome to protect them. They don't have. But there's red lines that if he crosses and he cannot have 30,000 more Palestinians dead as a consequence of going out. There's other ways to deal, to deal with the trauma caused by Hamas.
You know, the trauma caused by Hamas was an attack on Israel's sovereignty. Not only was it the civilians, 1,200 plus that were killed, many of which we represent and are going to be representing in other international tribunals. I was on that Zoom call this morning with our colleagues in Israel. But the fact of the matter is Hamas has to be eliminated as a threat. And I don't like that the fact that there's been reports that up to 30,000 Palestinians have been killed. Now, that report, of course, is coming in from the Palestinian, from the Gaza Health Authority, which is, in fact, Hamas. So let's be clear who we're dealing with. But the fact is, telling Israel how to conduct this war, I think, is a very dangerous precedent, Andy.
I think it's a terrible precedent. I don't think the President of the United States has a right to tell Israel in an existential situation how to conduct the war. And I don't think telling the Prime Minister what his policy should be is right. If you read what the President said in response to what Capehart asked him, first he says, and I'm reading, quoting, it is a red line. And then two sentences down, he says, so there's no red line. Well, is there or isn't there a red line? Are you going to stand with Israel? Or are you going to not support Israel? Are you going to cut Israel off? Or are you going to support Israel? The thing is, I think he needs to defer to what the Israelis on the ground are saying and thinking and not make these ridiculous calls back and forth. The figures, Jay, as you pointed out, of dead people are Hamas's figures.
Yes.
So I don't know whether those are true or not. I can't say.
You got to take those with more than a grain of salt. Let's go. We're getting calls already on this. We're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. Let's go to Todd in Georgia. Todd, welcome to the broadcast. You're on the air. Todd?
My call. Well, I'm curious as how Biden and the State Department don't understand the eschatology of the Iranian regime. Committing murder and mayhem is what they're commanded to do in order to summon their Mahdi, you know, their so-called Messiah. Right. And it seems like that Biden's setting us up, just putting us into a trap.
Well, you know, it's clear that the whole mindset of Hamas and Hezbollah, as well as the Houthis, is that this is their messianic zeal. And I don't call it a messianic zeal within the context of the Judeo-Christian tradition, obviously. It's within the Islamic tradition. And that Islamic tradition is dying for this cause and killing as many civilians, infidels as you can, is how you get rewards in heaven. So in that sense, you're totally correct. I think that they're setting up it's a false narrative too, by the way. But if you study the history and you look at where Islam has come from and what we've been dealing with even in the last 25 years in the United States, you're seeing, this is not new, you're seeing a replay of Muhammad's own dicta, his own theology playing out right now in real time in the United States and, of course, certainly in the Middle East.
Well, Jay, this is exactly right. You know, Pope Benedict XVI, who was a brilliant pontiff, a great scholar, Cardinal Ratzinger, delivered an address in Regensburg in Germany when he was pope, and he made a statement about rational and being rational in your thinking and how do you convert people and how do you bring people over to the side of what is right and what is theistic and what is atheistic. And he said in a discourse, and he was quoting the Emperor Emmanuel Paleologos in the 14th century, and he said, what has Muhammad done that is rational or reasonable in the progress of his religion, and what has he preached? Well, he got tremendous pushback because of this, and tremendous attacks from the Muslims and the Islamic community because he made a statement about reason and rationale. You cannot deal with reason and rationale when you're dealing with radical Muslims.
Well, here's the issue also that you're dealing with here, and that is Iran is using these proxies. It's the Houthis, it's Hamas, to a lesser extent. Right now, militarily, it's Hezbollah. But folks, that's coming. The Hezbollah North fight. I'm on a conference, a Zoom call with our Israeli colleagues every Monday morning at 9 o'clock in the morning, our time. And we go through what the, and I asked, I said, what does it look like up north? And they're saying likely some kind of military engagement in April and May that would be significant. So you have that happening simultaneously. And then you mentioned the Iran situation. And who actually wants a deal? Hamas has rejected the proposed ceasefire, in part because I think we're probably down to less than 60 hostages alive, of which they probably don't have control of most of them. But again, going back to the Capehart interview with President Biden, take a listen. This is about who actually wants a deal.
Who actually wants a deal? Do you think Hamas actually wants a ceasefire?
Well, I think Hamas would like a total ceasefire across the board, because they would see they have a better chance to survive and maybe rebuild. But that's not what I think the vast majority of people think. You have to look. After what happened in World War II and the carpet bombing that took place, what happened was we ended up in a situation where we changed the rules of the game, what constitutes legitimate rules of war. And they should be abided by.
Well, first of all, that's a totally incorrect statement of international law. What they called carpet, first of all, the Germans were carpet bombing. They were going after civilian targets. The Allies were always going after military targets. But Andy, you're a student of history, you're a historian. What do you think of that?
Well, I think it's an outrageous statement that he made. He's making the statement, the idea that the American military, the Allied military, the entire Allied military that agreed in carpet bombing, which is intensive bombing of the nation, of the oppressor, of the enemy, was now Biden says that he brings this up from carpet bombing. That's not what's happening in Palestine right now, that in Gaza right now. But he says that changes the constitutional legitimate rules of war. Are you saying that carpet bombing now made what we did in World War II unconstitutional through the rules of war and illegitimate? I hope not.
That's what it sounds like. Start playing with this language of international laws of armed conflict and international engagement, you got to be very careful and you got to be very specific. And Biden is neither, to be quite blunt. Let's go to Mike, who's calling from New Jersey on line 3. Hi, Mike.
Hi. The Germans were not hiding in churches, and they weren't hiding in residences, and they weren't hiding in schools. They had uniforms and they had helmets.
Yep.
Okay, and they also started the war. Okay, Hamas started this war. If they wanted to end it, they could release the hostages. Okay,
you know, if they have the hostages to release, but go ahead and finish up, Mike.
Yeah, Hamas is from hell. Muhammad's from hell. And Islam is from hell.
Yeah. So look, certainly this is where let me tell you where I agree with you. Number one, Hamas could have accepted the terms of the ceasefire. They did not. In part, I think it's number one, I don't think they know where the hostages are, or at least most of them. Two, they're saying Islamic Jihad, IJP, Islamic Palestinian Jihad, has some of them. Well, they've got control over the area, so this is nonsense. I think the reality is that a lot of these hostages are deceased. I hate to say that because we represent a lot of them. But I'm not optimistic on where it's going. By the way, we're looking at multiple tribunal lawsuits against the United Nations Relief Organization. We've already got FOIA requests out, but we've got plaintiffs that will be filing in the next probably week cases around the country and also in Europe dealing with this situation. So we're on top of it. Let me go ahead and take James' call out of Texas. Hey, James.
Hi, guys. Hi. I got a question on the floating pier that they want to put in.
Yep.
Isn't that Israeli territorial waters? Wouldn't they need the Israeli government's permission to put it in?
The Israelis have approved it. They said they're certainly willing for the United States, if that's what they want to do to help humanitarian aid, to put the pier in place. In fact, Israel will be providing, according to the president, the necessary security of that. But it does put at least 1,000, maybe 2,000 U.S. soldiers in harm's way. I think, to me, Andy, that is the most critical part of it.
Well, I think it does put them in harm's way. It makes them sitting ducks off the Mediterranean coast of Gaza. You've got a pier, a floating flotilla, whatever it is, and you're going to put American soldiers on there to facilitate the granting of aid from the flotilla to the mainland. Well, of course, those American soldiers are going to be subject to attacks from the mainland. It's inevitable that that's going to happen.
There's something else that's important here, and that is that President Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel, Prime Minister Netanyahu, has stated that he has the tacit support of several Arab leaders for driving ahead with the next engagement against Hamas. And I'm guessing that's Egypt and Saudi Arabia at a minimum, maybe Jordan as well. So President Biden's doing a little bit of a head fake when the reality on the ground is Arab neighbors want this threat from Hamas eliminated as well, because the Muslim Brotherhood has tried to take over all of these governments and continues to do so. Folks, as I said earlier, abandoning Israel is not an option here. In their greatest time of need, we need to support them more than ever. What President Biden is proposing, in our view, from a policy standpoint and a legal standpoint is unacceptable. Israel's our ally, and its fight for survival is paramount. I've mobilized our offices in the United States, in Europe, and in Jerusalem to meet this critical need, and we are depending on your support and able to do that. We're defending Israel even as President Biden orders military to create this floating disaster, as we call it, off of Gaza and draws his so-called red line, which he won't define. We've already filed FOIAs against the United Nations Relief Agency, lawsuits coming in the next few days. We just filed a legal submission to the UN Human Rights Council, and Cece Howe from our office is going over to make an oral intervention in Geneva later this month. We're also fighting, of course, domestically on this attempt by President Biden, as he mentioned, to codify Roe. Please support us now during our Life and Liberty Drive. Any amount is doubled at ACLJ.org. And by becoming an ACLJ champion, you fight alongside us each and every month. Join the fight at ACLJ.org. And if you become a monthly gift, you become an ACLJ champion. I want to turn our attention to Biden. President Biden said during his, and we can play this, when he referred to the death and the murder of Lake and Riley, in addition to not getting her name right, he used the term illegal, which has given him a lot of grief from the left. Let's go back to the State of the Union and actually, do we have that bite? Yeah, let's go ahead and play that.
Hi. Lincoln Riley, an innocent young woman who was killed by an illegal. That's right. But how many of the thousands of people being killed by illegals? To her parents, I say, my heart goes out to you, having lost children myself.
All right, I'm going to jump in right here because this was outrageous. Not only getting her name wrong was bad enough, and that was bad in this situation, and I'm not one that's jumping on his mental capacity and all of that, but that was bad. But then he used the term, which was appropriate, because the person was here illegally. He's not apologizing for not talking to the parents of Lake and Riley, but he is apologizing, Harry Hutchison, director of our public policy at the ACLJ, for using the term illegal, when from a policy and legal standpoint, that's exactly what the assailant, the accused, is, illegally in the United States. Why would you be apologizing for that?
Well, first, you shouldn't be. And secondly, it's important to note that under U.S. law, the accused killer was even more specifically an illegal alien. And so when the president referred to him as an illegal on Thursday, that was absolutely correct. On Friday, he appeared to back away, at least gently, but did admit that technically the accused killer was an illegal. But on Saturday, after being counseled, apparently by the woke elites in the White House, he then apologized for referring to the accused killer as an illegal. So at the end of the day, what counts in the consciousness of elites? What counts more than anything else is Western guilt. In other words, we are increasingly characterizing ourselves as the oppressor because we are not allowing our borders to be flooded by illegals who are then committing crime. And then the president compounds the issue by referring to the victim as a football coach from USC. So I think at the end of the day, beyond Biden's confusion, we need to stamp out and eradicate Western guilt. We have a right to defend our borders, just like Ukraine has a right to defend its borders, and just as Israel has a right to defend its borders.
I call those that enter the country illegally that they engage in unlawful entrance, making them thus illegal in the United States. That if you're looking at it legally, it was an unlawful entry, Andy, that results in their status under our law as being illegal.
They are illegal. And we need to say it. They are illegal.
Because of their unlawful
entry. That's right.
That's the tie-in.
My grandparents, your grandparents came into this country legally. at the beginning of the 20th century, and they were immigrants, but they came in legally. It was under some sort of a quota system they had in those days. But they met the quota, and they came in legally. If you are here because you slipped through the border, you are here illegally, and you are an alien. You are not an American. You are not entitled, in my view, to have to be called undocumented. That is pandering to the left. And as Professor Hutchison completely said correctly, it is because of Western elitism, and we have this idea of guilt, that we have to make these statements, and then we have to retract what we said and say, no, I'm sorry I did that. What a terrible thing I said. How horrible of me to have said that this person was illegal. He was really undocumented.
Listen to how he explained, President Biden explained this, number 10.
An undocumented person. And I shouldn't have used illegal. It's undocumented. And look, when I spoke about the difference between Trump and me, one of the things I talked about on the border was that the way he talks about vermin, the way he talks about these people polluting the blood. I talked about what I'm not going to do, what I won't do. I'm not going to treat any of these people with disrespect. Look, they built the country. The reason our economy is growing, we have to control the border and more orderly flow, but I don't share his view at all.
The way the economy is growing here is because of illegal immigration in the United States. That's what Joe Biden just said.
Well, there is empirical evidence in support of his preference. Because if you look at job growth, since Joe Biden took office, virtually all the job growth in the United States has come from immigrants, primarily illegal immigrants. And so job growth for native-born Americans is flatlining. That's number one. Number two, Joe Biden claims to be a lawyer. If he is a lawyer, he ought to understand that we have the right to protect our borders, and he has the constitutional responsibility to protect the nation's borders, and he refuses to do so. So instead of protecting America's borders, he prefers to attack Donald Trump. At the end of the day, I hope the American people reject Joe Biden's attempted sleight of hand.
I think that we need to define the terms exactly as they are. Let me just break you through the legal way this is. If someone comes to the United States through an unlawful entry, which is what it's called, they're then illegally in the United States, compared to someone who comes in through a lawful entry who is legally in the United States. One would be within the legal immigration process, the other would be outside the law and thus illegal. And to have to go back and apologize for it, in my view, is just, again, it's like the Israel situation, I'll tie it in. It's just placating the left here. That's exactly what he's doing. He is placating the left, and they continue to do that. And his party, the Democrats, are not giving him a break on this. Representative Jayapal from Washington State. Take a listen to this.
He should have used the word undocumented. I don't believe that the president's heart is with the word illegal. I think, frankly, I think he shouldn't have responded to a very disrespectful Republican member who was shouting at him, the president of the United States. That is not appropriate.
Yeah, okay. What's interesting about that comment is, by the way, the word undocumented. If you're undocumented and in the United States, Andy, you're here what?
Illegally.
Absolutely.
I mean, you're here illegally. Why do we have to placate? I think you use the word placate, Jay. That's very nice. I use the word pander.
All right, folks, this is why you fight back on all of these issues. Folks, as I said earlier, abandoning Israel is not an option here. In their greatest time of need, we need to support them more than ever. What President Biden is proposing, in our view, from a policy standpoint and a legal standpoint, is unacceptable. Israel's our ally, and its fight for survival is paramount. I've mobilized our offices in the United States, in Europe, and in Jerusalem to meet this critical need, and we are depending on your support and able to do that. We're defending Israel even as President Biden orders military to create this floating disaster, as we call it, off of Gaza and draws his so-called red line, which he won't define. We've already filed FOIAs against the United Nations Relief Agency, lawsuits coming in the next few days. We just filed a legal submission to the UN Human Rights Council, and CeCe Howe from our office is going over to make an oral intervention in Geneva later this month. We're also fighting, of course, domestically on this attempt by President Biden, as he mentioned, to codify Roe. Please support us now during our Life and Liberty Drive. Any amount is doubled at ACLJ.org. By becoming an ACLJ champion, you fight alongside us each and every month. Join the fight at ACLJ.org. And if you become a monthly gift, you become an ACLJ champion.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jay Sekulow.
So in the first half of the broadcast, we talked about the situation with Israel and this new red line that President Biden has sort of drawn and what that means as far as Israel and its nature of its self-defense. And then we also talked about the, you know, the phrase that he used involving the unfortunate and horrific killing of Laken Riley and calling the individual who perpetrated this, or at least allegedly perpetrated this, illegal, which we just showed you was exactly correct. But he's, of course, apologizing for that. Now I want to go domestically to Fulton County, the fiasco in Fulton County, because reports are that the judge is going to issue his ruling by the end of this week. To get you up to date, additional evidence came forward last week in the in a motion. And Andy, why don't you describe what that motion is so people understand what we're talking about here.
What the defense lawyers did is they offered proof through testimony that of an assistant district attorney in Cobb County that said that Fonnie Willis said in a phone conversation that this person actually heard that they're coming after us, don't say anything. This is what she told one of the witnesses to say in the case. They're coming. This is one after it came out how much she paid her friend Wade to be a prosecutor in the case. They're coming after us, don't say anything to anybody about it. She also had some corroboration that the affair started much earlier than Fonnie Willis and her boyfriend said that it started. So what this witness was proffering to do was to make this evidence available to Judge McAfee so that he could then have additional evidence. The judge has not decided whether to take that up. Now, there could be a lot of reasons for that. It may be, and I've had this happen many times in 49 years, that the judge says, I've heard all I want to hear. I don't need to hear anymore. I've heard all I need to hear in the case. I've made up my mind. I'm just writing my ruling, and I don't need to hear any more from any witness, Yeager, about what Fonnie Willis said to somebody or didn't say to somebody. This is, Jay, what he could very well be doing is he's made up his mind and he's writing his decision.
It's interesting, though, that right now the reports are that Fonnie Willis has a competitor that has entered the race for a Fulton County DA, and someone now has run for judge. So, Harry, while the judge and DA are not supposed to have political influence, the fact that they have opponents in their primaries or in their general elections now, the way that that's set up in the special election situation, to me, shows that this is now becoming, we always knew it was a political case to begin with, but the political pressure, you can't ignore it. It's there.
Absolutely. So there's political pressure on both the judge and on Fonnie Willis, the prosecutor. In addition, there is another looming legal issue that the judge and the court has not yet dealt with, and that is if you look at the investigation of Donald Trump and the 17 or 18 other defendants, it was triggered arguably by an illegally recorded phone call from Jordan Fuchs. What made the phone call illegal? It was recorded in Florida. And there's a new book out by Michael Isikoff and Daniel Kleidman, Find Me the Votes. And if the reporting is true, and I think it probably is, the reporter on the story is Molly Hemingway, then it's arguable whether or not the case will ever go to trial with respect to those defendants that have not already pled guilty.
Okay, that's because Florida's a two-party state. We got to support Israel, folks. It's serious. Folks, as I said earlier, abandoning Israel is not an option here. In their greatest time of need, we need to support them more than ever. What President Biden is proposing, in our view, from a policy standpoint and a legal standpoint, is unacceptable. Israel's our ally, and its fight for survival is paramount. I've mobilized our offices in the United States, in Europe, and in Jerusalem to meet this critical need, and we are depending on your support and able to do that. We're defending Israel even as President Biden orders military to create this floating disaster, as we call it, off of Gaza and draws his so-called red line, which he won't define. We've already filed FOIAs against the United Nations Relief Agency, lawsuits coming in the next few days. We just filed a legal submission to the UN Human Rights Council, and Cece Howe from our office is going over to make an oral intervention in Geneva later this month. We're also fighting, of course, domestically on this attempt by President Biden, as he mentioned, to codify Roe. Please support us now during our Life and Liberty Drive. Any amount is doubled at ACLJ.org. And by becoming an ACLJ champion, you fight alongside us each and every month. Join the fight at ACLJ.org. And if you become a monthly gift, you become an ACLJ champion. You know, because of your support of the American Center for Law and Justice, we have people like Mike Pompeo, former Secretary of State, who's our Senior Counsel for Global Affairs as part of the team here, which makes a huge difference. And Mike, I want to go back. We started the program off talking about the situation in Israel. I know you just came back. I was on a Zoom call with our office in Jerusalem and our colleagues there this morning. Prime Minister Netanyahu seems to prepare to go into Rafah, which is in the northern portion of Gaza, despite what the president is now saying is a red line. I wanted to get your take on this overall.
You know, Jay, it's pretty remarkable to see an American president publicly opposing an Israeli leader who was simply trying to defend his own country's sovereignty, essentially saying a red line. He kind of backed away from it, but make no mistake about it, beginning to put conditions on support, politically charged statements focused on restraining Israel, not on crushing Hamas. This is a major break in American foreign policy, all so that President Biden can chase down a handful of votes in a state he thinks is politically important to him. This is one of the most craven political acts of American national security risk being created by domestic political concerns that I have seen in my lifetime. I hope the Israelis will do the right thing. They have an obligation to put Israel first, to defend their sovereignty, to crush Hamas. They can't allow Hamas to continue. I'm convinced Prime Minister Netanyahu will do that the IDF will be successful. But boy, does it make it difficult when the United States, the primary partner for Israel for decades, Democrat and Republican alike, begins to walk away from it publicly, as President Biden does every single day.
You know, it's interesting to me. The pressure on Benjamin Netanyahu, in fact, all of Israel right now, is intense. Because world opinion, as it does oftentimes, unfortunately, especially with international institutions, goes anti-Israel very quickly. After a State of the Union message, and I played this earlier, I won't play it again, but President Biden was caught on a microphone saying he was going to have a, quote, come to Jesus conversation with Netanyahu, which I thought Bibi's response was great, was, I don't know exactly what that term means. I do know that Jesus was born a few miles from where I'm coming to you from right now. I thought that was a great response. But with all of the rhetoric and the you know, this power that he's putting in on Israel to be tough on Israel, yet he's when asked a question about, you know, does Hamas want a ceasefire and a settlement, he says yes. I don't see the same pressure on Hamas.
No, this is the thing that's so confounding. The best way to get to a ceasefire, the best way to get the hostages back, Jay, you and I have been with those families, yep, been in the room with those families. The best way to get the hostages back, the best way to push back against Iran and help our Gulf Arab allies, the Saudis, the Emirates, the best way to do that is to help Israel secure their western and southern border. It is confounding to me. The point about, you know, come to Jesus just, I think, shows how silly President Biden has become on this issue and had the absence of depth of understanding that, in fact, Jerusalem, the very place that his leadership now says, well, these are occupiers in Jerusalem, that these are people who aren't entitled to Jerusalem, to talk about it in this way is a historical, you and I have walked this ground, Jay. Yes. We've walked the ground in Jerusalem. We know this is where Jesus walked. Right. To talk about it this way is disheartening, disgusting, and frankly, dangerous for America too.
You mentioned the Arab partners in the region, and Prime Minister Netanyahu has said that he has the support of several of the Arab leaders for driving ahead with eliminating Hamas as a threat. And he didn't name names, but, you know, I can imagine that he's talking about Egypt, who's very concerned about Hamas because it's a border, Saudi Arabia, and others. How important is it that these allies, new allies, and that's a lot of it because of your work on the Abraham Accords, how much of that also is a factor that either the president is ignoring, in other words, what the regional partners want to do, but how much is it also allowing the Israeli government to go in and do its job? Complicated question.
It is, but that's a really good point. Now, the folks that President Biden is listening to are in the pro-Hamas contingent of his party in Dearborn, Michigan. He is not listening to the people who are at risk from Iran in the region. Now, make no mistake about it. Every leader in that region, you talked about the Egyptians, the Jordanians, at every level of government understands that the risk to them, to the instability, to the destruction of their economies, comes from Tehran, not from the folks in Jerusalem and in Tel Aviv, but from Tehran. And so I have no doubt that those Arab leaders want a stable, prosperous Israel. They want a secure region. They don't like the extremism. They would have been horrified by October 7th as well. Those leaders get that the threat is being driven by the Ayatollah and President Raisi in Iran, and not by any action that the Israeli government has taken to defend its own people.
The Pentagon says that 1,000 U.S. troops, at least, will be deployed to build this pier in Gaza so they can receive humanitarian aid, despite the fact that there is, in Ashdod, there is a pier and a port that's available 4 miles up the road. But anyways, Biden wants this. He keeps saying there's no boots on the ground for this operation. But the fact of the matter is, we know this. As soon as you have U.S. troops on the pier, you have boots on the ground.
You know what this sounds like to me, Jay? You've seen this. This sounds like 200 lawyers sitting in a room with the State Department.
Yes.
That's what this sounds like to me. Somebody said, well, as a technical matter, this is just crazy to build something offshore and think somehow that you're going to escape some legal requirement. My fear is even deeper. My fear is that what they'll essentially be doing is providing material support to terrorists, that this food, this aid, this assistance will go to bolster Hamas and Iran. That's the danger from this crazy idea of somehow building an offshore floating whatever the heck it's going to be.
So during the State of the Union, President Biden slipped up, apparently, called Laken Riley's alleged killer illegal. And as we've talked about on the broadcast today, what that means is someone engaged into the United States, came into the United States, an unlawful entry. At which point, once you have committed an unlawful entry, you are illegally in the United States. So he, by using the term illegal, he was not legally incorrect. He was actually legally correct. But he's backing down on that now. And then he made the statements about how many more are killed by people that are here illegally. Totally conflating the issues. The border crisis is now every city in the country. Anybody that's on and especially any city that's on an expressway. Between the sex trafficking and the fentanyl and all of these issues, but refusing to identify people that are here illegally as illegally in the country, I think sets us up for failure, no matter how much money you put at this.
Jay, every 12-step program starts with the principle that is step one, recognizing you have a problem. And the failure to be able to simply say that these people are illegal aliens, it's the statutory term. It's also the most descriptive term. They're here unlawfully. They're here illegally. I think suggests to you exactly how it is the case that you have tens of thousands of folks crossing every month, many of them on the terror watch list, a lot of them now from the Chinese Communist Party. If you can't acknowledge that you have a problem, that the border is not secure, and you have a responsibility to fix it, and importantly, Jay, the ability to fix it. We know how to do this. We did it in the Trump administration. If you can't recognize you have a problem, this is going to lead to more destruction, more poisoning through fentanyl, and sadly, more instances like what happened in Georgia to this lovely young woman.
Yep. You wrote a great article for us at ACLJ.org, how Americans are worse off by basically every metrics than they were 4 years ago. Do you think President Biden politically now, 8 months out, is in trouble politically?
Well, you know, long way out. Seems to me like his polling is terrible. But more than that, the storyline that they want to tell is that the American people are dumb, that the American people can't see that things are more expensive, their nation is more secure, their friends, their children that are serving in the military are at risk in ways they've not been in an awfully long time. I think that's what bodes particularly ill for President Biden's political campaign. Not the polling today, but the fact that Americans are simply worse off.
I appreciate your comments, as always, and glad that you're part of the team here at the ACLJ. Thanks so much. Mike Pompeo, Senior Counsel for Global Affairs. Thanks, Mike. So, folks, you're getting a real good idea of what we're dealing with. And I said, we've activated our office in Jerusalem. And I want to talk about this for a moment, if I can. And that is, your support of the ACLJ right now is really critical, because we're having to engage the Israel issue on multiple fronts. We're having to do it in the international tribunals, that's the United Nations, the Human Rights Council. We're dealing with the United Nations Relief Agency. We already have a Freedom of Information Act demand out to UNRWA. But we're also putting together litigation right now on behalf of families, some in the United States, some in Europe. They'll be filed in federal court or in state court there. And I'm just telling you, folks, the work, the intensity of this work right now is very real. I was on the phone this morning, or a Zoom call that we do on Mondays and Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Our time, with my colleagues in Israel. And this is, we're at a very serious point. They're very concerned about what's going on up north with Hezbollah, which is another Iranian proxy. So all of these groups together create nothing but havoc. But your support during our Life and Liberty campaign means your donations will be doubled. And that really helps us fight back on all of these tribunals. Jordan's over with our team at our offices in Strasbourg right now. CC Heil's getting ready to go to Geneva for UN interventions. Domestically, we're working on the litigation that we're going to be filing right here in the United States probably next week. None of this happens without your support. And as I said, because we're in our Life and Liberty Drive, any amount you donate will be doubled at ACLJ.org. If you can donate monthly, you become an ACLJ champion. And I will tell you, we are at 19,647 ACLJ champions. My goal is that by the end of March, we're at 20,000, on our way ultimately to 30,000. So ACLJ.org for that. That's ACLJ.org. Back with the last segment coming right up. Your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. 800-684-3110. It was great that we had our colleague, Senior Counsel for Global Affairs, Mike Pompeo, on. We're just talking to Will, our producer, during the break. I mean, you think about the team that we've assembled here. Of course, Scott, Professor Hutchinson and Andy Economo here on the set with me today. We've got Jordan's out in our offices in Strasbourg, France. We've got CC Heil getting ready to go to Geneva. I mean, it's quite a team. And then you add to it Tulsi Gabbard, Rick Grenell, former director of national intelligence, Mike Pompeo, former director of the CIA, and also former secretary of state as senior counsels for the ACLJ. It's an impressive lineup. It started years ago when we had John Ashcroft as a fellow of the ACLJ, still a fellow of our Law and Justice Institute. So again, great team. Your support of the ACLJ makes all that possible at ACLJ.org. Tim is calling from California on line two. Hi, Tim.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
We have to stop the Biden administration from walking away from our friend Israel. If we don't stop Biden, World War III is going to start.
Well, my concern with the World War III aspect of it is, Harry, is when you put U.S. troops in harm's way by having 1,000 or 2,000 troops on this pier off the coast of Gaza, you're inviting the Houthis, who like these attacks. I mean, their modus operandi is to attack flotillas, ships. This has got that same kind of aura, basically. You put U.S. troops in harm's way like this, you're almost inviting a conflict.
Absolutely. And so if you think about it from a long-run perspective, the Houthis are supported by Iran. Iran is basically in a military relationship, supply relationship, with Russia. Russia is working with China. And so what you have is a lineup of nation states that see the United States as an enemy or potential enemy, and that then leads at least potentially to World War III. Now, I don't foresee World War III immediately, but it's certainly a possibility. But it is clear beyond question that U.S. troops are being placed in harm's way by the policies of the Biden administration. And the policies of the Biden administration, I think, are at variance with the true long-term interest of Israel.
You know, there's an interesting dialogue. I'm going to play it for you in a moment. And that's with John Brennan. Oh, no, is that
Margaret Brennan
from PBS. And as well as Senator Mark Warner. And this is the idea of eliminating Hamas. Before we play it, though, Andy, we spent a lot of time in this region. Hamas has been a major factor in the region. Many times when we've been there, we've seen the Hamas flags flying not only in Gaza, but also in the West Bank area, near Bethlehem. They've exercised a lot of control. Eliminating it, to me, does not even appear to be an option at this point, not only in light of the attack, but on what they're capable of reconstituting and doing.
That's right. Unless there is concerted effort on the part of Israel to move forward in this attack on Hamas, which had attacked Israel to begin with, then it's a never-ending cycle.
All right, here's the question from Margaret Brennan, and then you're going to listen to Senator Mark Warner, his ranking Democrat, for his response.
When Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister, says total victory is within reach, weeks away, you are not describing total victory within
reach. I have not.
You're saying the impact's
meeting tiny. Meeting with folks in Israel, in the military community, in the intelligence community, the idea that you're going to eliminate every Hamas fighter, I don't think is a realistic goal.
Okay, well, I don't think that's, Senator Warner, with due respect, I think it's the only goal. I mean, I don't see how anything short of total elimination of Hamas is possible here. You cannot have, first of all, Gaza is 7 miles wide and 25 miles long with 2 million, 2.5 million people. Many of them very loyal to Hamas because Hamas has been their leadership. So the terrorists took over Gaza and the West Bank because Fatah, the Palestinian Authority, is so politically weak. So anything short, Harry, of eliminating Hamas is a failure in my view.
Well, I think you're onto something there. And the real question is, the fundamental question, is a truce plausible with a terrorist regime that has pledged to eliminate the nation state of Israel and has pledged long term to eliminate Christians and pledged to eliminate anyone who is essentially not a Muslim? So I think at the end of the day, Israel is faced with a binary choice. Do we go after the terrorists and do we eliminate the threat to the nation state of Israel, or do we simply accept the possibility of another October 7th? And I think another October 7th incident is untenable for most Israelis. And I think we can see why if you look at the pillaging and the savaging of Israeli people on that particular day.
Andy, I view Israel's situation right now as dealing with an existential threat with Hamas on the border and then to the north, Hezbollah, both of which are Iranian proxies. And as I just said to Mike Pompeo, very concerned with this creation of a pier, that what you're going to do is now invite the Houthis in because they intend to attack by the sea. So you've collectively gone around the area.
Yes, you've done a good job of encircling Israel to the Hezbollah in the north of Lebanon, Hamas to the south in Gaza, and now you're putting the Houthis, who will definitely take aim at this pier. Don't think that they won't. That's fodder for them. They love that. And basically, Israel is in the middle trying to live in peace.
So the difficulty here, I think, that we have to be really cognizant of is the fact that short of eliminating Hamas is total failure. And I that is not an option here. So let me tell you what we're doing at the ACLJ to deal with this, because we have to do this on multiple fronts. As you know, we represent hostage families, and we are diligently working on a very difficult situation. Some of our families have been released. Some of our families have been killed. It's horrible, but we have a team working on that. We have a team going to the United Nations to deal with some of these issues towards the end of this month. Jordan's in our office at the European Center for Law and Justice right now, working with our team there. I was on a Zoom call this morning with our domestic team and our team in Israel, working with both Israeli lawyers and U.S. lawyers about bringing a large action against the United Nations relief organizations, 501c3. There's going to be, and multiple people are filing lawsuits here, which I think is very helpful. You've got the law firm of Quinn Emanuel's doing some damage lawsuits. Randy Singer's firm in Norfolk, Virginia, is doing representing some of the families in damage cases. We want to bring an action against UNRWA for funding terrorism, and this is the way we're going to do it. And we're also interpleading at these international tribunals. None of this can happen, though, without your support of the American Center for Law and Justice. And this is no time to abandon our greatest ally in the region. It's unacceptable. Israel's our ally, and they're going to fight for their survival, folks, and that's what we're dealing with here. We're mobilizing, as I said, our offices here in the United States, Europe, and in Jerusalem, but we can't continue this critical fight without your support. Defending Israel, even as President Biden orders military to create what I call the floating disaster off of Gaza and draws a so-called red line about continuing the fight into Rafah, is the reason why we've got to fight back on the international tribunals. We've already filed FOIA lawsuits on UNRWA regarding funding. Lawsuits are days away, probably early next week. Just filed a legal submission to the United Nations Human Rights Council, preparing to make a critical oral intervention in Geneva this month. And at home, we're fighting against Biden's promise at the State of the Union to make Roe versus Wade permanent. All of this is happening simultaneously. So please support us now during our Life and Liberty Drive. Any amount is doubled at ACLJ.org. And by becoming an ACLJ champion, you fight alongside us each and every month. An ACLJ champion is someone that picks an amount donates each month, and you become an ACLJ champion. And we encourage you to do it. My goal is to get to 20,000. We're at 19,637, maybe a little bit more than that right now. So we want to get to 20,000. Go to ACLJ.org to do that. ACLJ.org. Any amount you do, if you can't do it monthly, we understand that too. Any donation will really help our work at ACLJ.org. And again, if you can give monthly, you become an ACLJ champion. We'll talk to you tomorrow.